Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You got
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a nice Wednesday evening for episode number 331. For those of you keeping score, again, thank you to the band Far Cry for our intro music. Definitely got to get lead guitarist and band leader Pete Fry on the show sometime soon because they actually have a lot going on. It's about time to get an update on them, so we'll get them back here as soon as we can. And welcome in the chat room. We've got it open. It is working. First two in tonight. We're actually the two that called in on our open lines night, Tommy B. Smith and Clayton Barnett. So we've got a good show tonight. And first, we'll cover just a few updates. Not a lot, not a lot. We've got, of course, the Imaginarium window is open now and just for a short time. To September, just a couple weeks into September, but we have discounts on event tickets on all expo space. The guest applications are open, and we also have discounted submissions for the film festival at Film Freeway, and we also have the International Screenwriters Association for accepting original screenplays that are non-produced. So that is what's on the table there. We definitely are hoping everyone takes advantage of that because this is our 10th anniversary, so we want everybody to take advantage of that. And but tonight, yeah, we're looking forward to the show tonight. That's going to be – looks like it's going to be me. I'm hoping Daniel's supposed to be on tonight. as luck would have it, though, Holly ended up getting back a little later than we planned to Lexington, so she will not, unfortunately, be joining us tonight. So it will be me, and I will be joined by an amazing guest here very shortly, a man of magic and wonder and creativity, and yes, very, very much a Renaissance creative guy with many talents. So yeah, just hang on here for just a few minutes, and we will be getting our guest on the air. And let me know how you're doing in the chat room as well. Be glad to pass along any updates you all have. See that also Amy McCorkle has just joined, award-winning filmmaker and author. Metal Beck Harrison has joined the chat room. God, I do have news for Beck. Now, this is pretty cool. We've got Beck is going to be doing a book blog. A new book blog. She'll be doing book reviews and all that fun stuff, and it looks like she'll be participating on a couple blog tours that we have coming up with Aaron Drown and Carol Preflatish. So we definitely hope that works out as planned and Beck makes her debut, because that's going to be fun because she's a lifelong bibliophile and definitely knows what she's talking about when it comes to the world of books. So she'll be a great, great reviewer. So let's see, we've got, well, Clayton, hey, he is cranking out the words, and yes, he wanted me to pass along a message to tonight's guest, and yes, thank you, Clayton. He made it in to give us a little message, and he had to bounce out because he had a long work day, and he had a full day job, and he says, and toilet repair, oh, God, but he got his writing in. Now, that's an indie writer for you, folks. Yeah, when you can fold in the work, the toilet repair, and still hit your word count, that's when you're a bona fide, a pro indie author. So that is awesome. And yeah, we got Sandy Lender, the genre blender, coming in, and definitely big shout out to her. We'll be mentioning her name in just a second. And yes, And Tommy B is using all caps. Yes, he's got the shout out going on. So yeah, chat room is already pretty lively. Got a burgeoning bit of excitement in the chat room. And yeah, and Amy just said she just got finished with a whirlwind August. So yes, she has. Amy's always doing stuff. Very cool. And very cool stuff. She had I will pass it along since she put it in the chat room. She had an amazing dinner with Kevin Smith, and yes, that Kevin Smith, the one you're through, and then hit the Clerks 3 premiere in Hollywood. So she had a lot more fun than I had in the recent couple of weeks. And Sandy, and a good update, because you remember Sandy, when she came back from Imaginarium, she had the big shelf collapse that occurred, you know, which of course had a mound of debris that, you know, definitely, you know, a titanic amount of debris that was mounded in her closet after that. But she has now repaired that. So we've got a lot of progress going on with our chat group here. New blog from Metal Beck Harrison. We have, of course, Tommy B every week's, you know, dragging down new 5-star reviews. We've got Sandy Lender fixing the shelf. And then we've also got, of course, Amy McCorkle coming off her big August, which included, like I said, director Kevin Smith and a Clerks 3 premiere in Hollywood. That is pretty cool. I wish I had something that exciting to add from my world. I've been just chipping away at the workload and writing away and getting done with, I'm within striking range of finishing the final polish on the novel Days of Darkness. And I said today, I made a little post about it, but yeah, I think fans of Dante, Clive Barker, Lovecraft, and Wayne Barlow will like this novel a lot. So, but yeah, I'm on the home stretch with that. I hope to have that handed off to the editor probably beginning of next week, I hope, unless unforeseen things happen that knock me off my schedule and rhythm on my writing sessions. I should get that done. So, and I know that's not as exciting as Kevin Smith and new blogs and all kinds of stuff, but that's pretty cool. And yeah, we've got all kinds of cool stuff, all kinds of cool stuff going on. This is good. Good conversations in the chat room. We always take comments and questions from there. So definitely, let us know, if you have any comments, questions you want me to pass along. And Sandy does have an update. 4 books in edit phase right now. I'm supposed to pause that to do the International 3-Day Novel Contest this weekend. So absolutely fantastic, Sandy Lender. This is awesome. And, so that's good news. So, yeah, I'm with you. I got several novels in the pipeline just waiting editing. And then, like I said, one finished novella that's completely done and back, and we just need to get the cover art finished on that, and then we will get that released. But, yeah, I know how that is. The pipeline is full, so that is cool. So, again, I will mention that, the blog tour, I mentioned that Metal Beck will be hopefully making her book blog debut on. You can sign up for that if you have a book blog for either or both. Carol Preflatish with her mystery novel Witch Hunt, and then The Gods Must Clearly Smile by Aaron Drown is featured in the other, which is a good collection of mainly speculative fiction, like we discussed with Aaron on his visit on the show. There's a couple tales that actually are more literary fiction, not spec fic, but yeah, majority of the tales are spec fic. So it's kind of want to make sure that's clear for anybody that signs up on the tour. It's going to be awesome. So, let's see. All right. So, let's give a big shout out to our 2 parties that brought you tonight's show. And that would be, as I said, Sandy Lender, the genre blender, and the one and only Ren Garcia. And I'm going to have to answer his question tonight. Let's get into that while I realize that I am the sole person tonight that can answer the Ren Garcia question, the famous one at the end. So here's a little bit from Ren, and then we'll come over and give you a spot from Sandy. Here we go.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, absolutely, Ren Garcia. Weird enough on every level. Don't worry, man. But in a good way, in a good way. I'll just say that, yeah, because crazy and weird can be good or bad. But yes, weird, yeah, in a good way, Ren. So yes, the answer is yes. So thank you very much for supporting the show. And now I'll give you a little spot from Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender. Here we go.
The latest release from author Sandy Lender is book 3 of the Fairy Holiday series titled I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer. It's a standalone story in the series, but it's got all the fun, humor, horror, and sweet paranormal romance you'd expect of a Lender Blender vampire satire. Come on down to the Naples Hideaway and Marina for a fun and romancy vacay. But watch out for the Grendwolves and the random femme fatale who thinks she's competing for your vampire's attention. Pick up I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer by Sandy Lender today.
I love that. I guess got to get that down. Hey, Lender Blender vampire satire. Love that. Love that. That's awesome, Sandy. And looks like our guest is actually in queue. So I'm going to go ahead and move straight to our guest for tonight. Very excited. Somebody that I've admired for a long time. And I love having this guest with us at Imaginarium. Always adds a lot of flair and pizzazz. And definitely is, as I said, a Renaissance creative. First of all, yeah, he is definitely an author, and he is the author of the great Decoverse series of novellas, and those are fantastic. You gotta check those out. And then he also has written several books on the subject of magic, because yes, he is a musician. He is also a cosplayer, and he has a mighty fine voice as a singer. And then, if that wasn't enough, he's also the producer, director, and host of the internationally popular podcast, Back of the Cereal Box. So I'm very honored and proud to bring on to the show again, welcoming the one, the only, John B. Pica. John, you should be live about now. All right. You're welcome to the show.
Check one, check one. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Loud and clear. Welcome.
Hey there, friends and foes.
There he is.
My phone says I'm muted, but then it said I'm unmuted. So I don't know whether, you know. Anyway, hey, how you doing tonight? I'm super excited to be here. Back on the Star Chamber Radio Show.
Been a while, and as luck would have it, Holly got in late, so we didn't think she was going to be on the show. But guess who just popped up in queue here? Holly. So you get to talk to Holly after all. Holly, you're on.
Hello, hello, hello. Hello, hello.
Hello, my dear heart. How are you?
Oh, exhausted and just wore out. But I hopped on here to, you know, heed the call.
Well,
and I wanted to talk to Johnny.
Well, I am so glad that you are here. I went through the same thing you did about a year ago myself. So my heart goes out to you, and, you know,
Thank you.
I'm here for you, my baby.
Thank you. Thank you. Much love, John. Love you dearly, honey. Yeah, for those who don't know what we're talking about, yeah, my father passed, and we had the funeral every past weekend. So needless to say, I have been in Indiana for almost 2 weeks, and I just got in a while ago, and it's been a mad dash because I've had to put stuff up and unpack and straighten things out. But I got on here.
Ta-da!
I wanted to have a good evening and visit with John. And
yeah, I looked down and I saw the 812 number come in, and I was like, oh my God, she is going to dive in here. All right. Yeah, so we didn't want you to have pressure tonight, but not that John is pressure, and John is always a great person to visit with, but glad you're here. And yes, John, where do we start? I mean, my God, your podcast is rocking. I mean, you've got your Decoverse out now in print, and in its individual titles, you've got you're performing, you're doing conventions. I mean, God, where do you want to start? It's your show tonight.
Let's talk about that Decoverse series, because I haven't been on since Volume 2 dropped. And
oh my God, true. That is true.
Yeah. So last year we released Volume 1, Night Right, which is a great. Well, I say it's great. I've only read the reviews online, so I can only go by what other people say. But it's a fun story about Adolf Hitler. It's about Adolf Hitler at the end of World War II making a pact with the most evil, ancient evil the world has ever known. Count Dracula, to create an army of vampire Nazis, and only the heroes of the age can assemble to them and prevent a post-apocalyptic future. That's Volume 1, Night Right. And then this summer, we dropped Volume 2, One Night at the Roxy, which is published by Seven Star Press. And A Night at the Roxy is exactly what it says. It's one night in Chicago while all of the superheroes of the age are overseas in Europe fighting vampire Nazis. They leave Chicago and the Nexus of Reality defenseless. And the story is all about how the character of Big Daddy Cool Johnny Delarocca and his bombshell kittens, who are super-powered showgirls, have to step up and protect the Nexus of Reality from being controlled by that same ancient evil. Time-traveling gangsters, super-powered showgirls, and vampire Nazis in a just rollicking, rousing tale. And both of those are available from Seven Star Press. On Amazon,
yeah, you had,
and Barnes & Noble.
Well, you had Holly sold with just vampire and, everything else.
Oh, yeah.
Bonus,
you say Dracula, you say vampire, I'm on board.
So can I tell you how surprised I am? So I wrote Night Right originally like 15 years ago, 10 years before.
Mm.
Yeah, I wrote it years and years and years ago, and I couldn't figure out why nobody was writing about vampire Nazis. There were vampire zombies, Nazi zombies,
right.
But there were no Nazi vampires. And I was just like, aren't vampires infinitely more terrifying than zombies? I mean, you got super speed, super strength, you shape change, you can't be killed by conventional means, Zombies are—they're slow, they're dumb. You can smell them coming a mile away.
They're disgusting.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So I thought I'm going to write a vampire Nazi story, and I can't believe there's not more of them out there. I don't even know if there is one. I'm sure there is, but as far as I know, I wrote one of the first.
Yeah. I've never heard or read another one, and I read a lot of vampire literature. I've never ran across one. And that's why when you come to us with this whole thing, I was like, oh, this is fantastic.
This is
refreshing.
I think
John
is definitely
because,
one of the first. Yeah.
Do you think it's because Nazis and vampires are just too evil to put together that people can't even like wrap their brains around it?
Maybe that's it. I don't know, but like you said, they've got Nazi zombies, and that's too evil. you know, I mean,
yeah,
you know.
There have been
so,
Nazi werewolf
yeah.
stories. There have been Nazi werewolf stories.
That's,
I've seen
oh,
those.
That's so true. You're mm-hmm. right.
And
well,
that's actually
and,
based on some actual rumors
okay.
from World War II
true,
German
yeah.
research. Yeah. So that's,
yeah.
that's a weird one.
Yeah.
that's mm-hmm. a fun one to look into. But yeah, it's but yeah, I think John is actually one of the only ones I'm aware of, you know, that's done that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's cool. So,
that's a good
yes.
thing. It's a
pioneer.
Good thing.
but
and,
yeah,
and,
it's
and
a good good
there, fit. There are two more volumes in the series. You guys have volume 3 in hand, but I'm still
mm-hmm.
writing volume 4. I've been dealing with a little bit of writer's block. So, Steven,
oh, yeah.
Holly,
that happens.
How do you break through the writer's block? I know the story I want to tell. I'm just having the hardest time finding the correct words to tell that story.
Well, I will give you a quick spin, and Steven, of course, will have the wonderful advice, but I would suggest just writing something down every day. I don't care if it's one sentence. Just sit down and dedicate a few minutes and just write a sentence out. And another thing is, you know, your beginning of your story, how you want to start it, some characters you're going to, you know, introduce, who you're going to use, and the ending, well, then you know where you're going. So that helps you along the way. So if you know how you want to start it and how you end it, then you know the path that you're going to have to take to get from A to B. And that also helps. You know, I know a lot of people like to be pants first instead of plotters, you know, but just knowing A to B helps tremendously because that gives you a path. And then you could sit down and like I said, you could write a little bit here, a little bit there, just, oh, this is an idea. You know, so-and-so did this and this and this, and then this happened. Just write every day. One sentence makes a huge difference. And then you'll start to think about it, and you'll start to flow. That's my suggestion. I will let Stephen have more of a logical, I'm sure.
No, that's actually really good. And John sounds like he already has, you know, he knows the story he wants to tell in general. So he does have the destination
mm-hmm.
you're talking about. The thing that I think is important is that, yeah, don't when you sit down to write, don't let yourself get hung up. If one scene is kind of like you're kind of slogging through a scene or not really, yeah, go ahead and jump to another scene. Like sometimes I'll do that just to make sure I'm getting, you know, just keeping it going. And then when I go back and to that earlier scene to go ahead and address it again, sometimes it'll pop right open then. So the important thing is, you know, to go with the flow. And, you know, and if you're kind of hung up on a scene and not, you know, getting a good grasp on it yet, just go to another scene that you have in mind and just roll with it. And just so you can get, you know, some words down, get the momentum and the flow going. And I think that does help. Yeah. So not getting just bogged down on one particular part of it. And I mean, I've done a Pavlovian thing in my own world where my writing space is unique for writing. I only use it for that and nothing else. And I have a very habit of what I do. I put on a certain kind of music when I write, and it's in a certain, and it's on a computer that's only used for writing. It's in a place that I only, a desk that I only sit down for writing. So what I've did to trick myself into is that every time I sit down in that chair, my brain kind of snaps into a creative mode, and that's always kept me away from a really hard writer's block, and that just worked for me. But it was kind of really you know, almost like, you know, creating my own little environment that is only solely for writing, and it works at least for me. And as far as getting you past that, so that when you sit down, it kicks you in gear. But yeah, the main thing is going with the flow and not getting too caught up in word counts. I know, you know, some people need them. Some people, you know, need a kind of a word count goal to focus on. But I think that it's most important just to do a little bit often. And you know, I think that's more important than doing a lot
mm-hmm.
Sporadically. And so,
right.
So just mm-hmm. try to sit down. Even if you don't get 100 words done, you know, even if you're, you know, staring at the screen a little bit, just make sure you are chipping away at it. And and it keeps your subconscious brain, I think, in that zone where you know, it'll kind of work its way through. And I think that's another thing that helps. Just make sure you're giving
Sandy,
at least a little time every often.
Sandy yeah. Linder also wanted me to tell you, John, in the chat room, that she said it's called writing the dessert first. So if you're kind of hung up on something, write the thing that's most desiring to you first. Write it down first, and then you can go from there.
That's kind of a cool idea. So
I like
kinda,
that.
Yeah, kind of changing gears, but kind of talking about writing. So when I was writing Knight Rake, the characters did things that I did not anticipate. They took mm-hmm. over and they wrote themselves. So, Steve, I've mentioned this to other people who aren't as creative or who aren't writers, and they look at me like I have a third eye. And have you experienced that yourself, that moment where the character says or does something that surprises mm-hmm. even you, the writer?
Yes.
They have a mind
and
of their own.
That is specifically the reason why I don't over-outline myself to death on a novel. I always leave myself some breathing room. I got a kind of skeletal idea, an outline, but I always leave that room because exactly what you're saying. Yeah, sometimes things jump up in the middle of the writing and you don't expect them. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and in particular, I'm not going to spoil it, who is the descendant of Jonathan and Mina Harker in the book. And when you learn his true identity, it was a complete surprise to me. I had no idea that was going to happen. And I was sitting there looking at the page going, holy crap.
That is awesome. That is cool. I love that when that hits. Yep.
Well, I always say, you know, the characters, you talk about the characters taking a mind of their own. I was talking about it in the chat room that they're quite the tricksters because you will be going one way. And then you've got a plan. You think you've got it all planned out, and this is how it's going to go. And then you sit down and yell, boom, boom. Nope, they're going to take this twist. But then that's where brilliance comes in. You know, so much more opens up, and you're like, hey, that ain't a bad idea. Let's examine this. Let's go on this. And that's where a lot of times your B characters, which we have talked about before, Stephen, on here, your
mm-hmm.
side characters
yep. yeah,
sometimes
secondary
take
characters.
Front
yeah.
row, you know, or can do a book on their own, like a little novella, or have a story of their own, like Stephen with his Raiden and Ragnar tales. They took a breath of their own away from, you know, the regular series. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's where, you know, some of these characters you think, oh, they're just side, they're not going to be anything main. Bam, yeah, they become that. And take a life of their own. And non-writers, like they was talking about, you know, Sandy was talking about, non-writers just don't get that. You know, they do look like,
right.
they look at you like you have two heads, you know.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's fun. I love side characters. That's what I said, never take your side
mm-hmm.
characters for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Because you
no.
don't know when they're going to get a bigger voice of their own. You know, they'll be surprised.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at Stranger Things with the Eddie Munson character.
Mm.
They didn't expect that.
<Mm-mm>.
Yeah, sometimes your secondaries take over, man, and it's sometimes it's a good thing when that happens. But, yeah, you always got to keep an eye out for that. So, yeah,
yep.
John,
that's true.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at comments in the chat room here real quick. I will get this one.
I know.
It's from Sandy. It's she said she had a character reveal his parentage to her recently, and it freaking rocked her world. She was like, dude, that's amazing. How the hell did this come together? She had to go back to the
yeah.
previous novel and double-check the timeline.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this kid is flipping perfect and important. Freaked me right now. Or freaked me out. freaked me right out. So there we
That's
go,
true.
Sandy.
That's true, Sandy. They're sneaky. Like I said, they're little tricksters. But yeah, I get it, John. I totally get it. And it's a neat thing, you know, when they change your thought process because they do have a voice of their own. Anne Rice was always, you know, talking about how Lestat took a voice of his own because those of us that follow her, she calls, you know, the people of the page. She always did. And she was done with the Vampire Chronicles. She said she was done. She left Lestat out to roam the world and for us to enjoy him. And he's free to do what he may. And she was not going to write anymore about Lestat. Done completely years ago. And then she said he kept talking to her. He kept talking to her. He kept on and on and on and on and on. So finally, she had to start writing. And that's what she wrote the last three Lestat books, you know, the past few years. Because she said he wouldn't shut up. She said literally he would not shut up. He wouldn't leave her alone. So she had to put it on paper.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, people who aren't creative and don't have the creative spark, they do have a hard time understanding that. But it is definitely something that happens. And not just in novels, it happens in stage productions as well. Like, you know, I've been an actor all my life, and there have been times where characters I've played on stage have, you know, done things that I wouldn't have expected. And those are magic moments.
Right.
Yeah, that's
so
you feel it. So what's that, Holly?
Let me ask you this then. I was going to ask John, these books come along, you said, like, what, 10 years ago plus? You wrote the first one. Okay. What actually sparked you, other than you sit and thought about, oh my gosh, there's no Nazi vampires? I mean, do you have like a love of vampires, and you like the read a lot of World War II history, or what actually inspired this to come forth?
So I have always been obsessed with 1940s culture.
Mm-hmm.
And pop culture, science fiction of the age and whatnot. But, you know, it was really the popularity of The Walking Dead that made me sit back and think, you know, why are people so freaked out about zombies and over the moon about zombies? And I said to a friend, now, vampire Nazis, that vampires, that's scary. And, you know, I made the point that a vampire army would be horrifying. And that's when the whole idea, he said, well, you know, you ought to write about that. You love World War II. And that sparked the idea. So, and then the rest kind of filled in because I was doing stage productions with the Big Daddy Cool character in the Bombshell Kittens, and it was a natural outpouring to use what I was already working on and already, you know, doing on stage to color the setting for that story.
I get you. So did you read a lot of, like, vampire literature prior to this,
along with
like World War II literature? I mean, have you read a lot of the literature, or is it more just you were kind of like, you know, into the whole 40s pop culture stuff and like the noir, you know, kind of? I know you love noir. I know our audience might not know that, but you love noir. So, maybe go into that.
Well, so I've always been obsessed with vampire stories. Vampires and werewolves are, like, you know, something I've always been obsessed with. And, you know, I've seen not every, but a lot of vampire movies, and read not every, but a lot of the different stories out there. And so it was just a natural fit. I I was a huge fan of the old Universal Monster movies. And a lot of times I'm inspired not by what I see or read, but what I don't see and I don't read. And same thing happens to me on stage. When I created the Big Daddy Cool character, it was a direct response to what I didn't see other performers and theatrical productions doing. And it was directly in response to the swing music revival. But there were things missing from the works that were coming out, and I just kind of filled in the gaps in my head. And so that's how I tend to be inspired, is not by what people are doing, but what they're not doing. And so in the case of Nightreich, I saw a missing opportunity, something nobody was doing. And I was like, well, if it is to be, it's up to me. And you guys will probably remember Logan. Logan Masterson. Did you guys know him?
Yes, I did. I did. Yeah, Holly did get a chance to meet him. No.
I never did.
He was one of my consultant beta readers on Nightreich. And he's the one who actually came up with he was one of the people I had that conversation with. I was like, I don't see anybody else doing this. I want to do it. So that's where it came from.
That's cool. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, and I'm super happy to have it published by Seven Star Press. And
well, thank you.
Well, we're happy to have you. We are happy and joyful to have you. We love you, John.
Well, I love you guys too. Now, I just I got to figure out what is the deal with conventions post-pandemic. I'll tell you what, I've had the hardest time getting booked for conventions. The hardest I've ever had. And look, I've got the comic book series that I started based on these same characters from the Decoverse. It was a best-selling release last year. Number one release for steampunk last October. And steampunk conventions that I went to and said, hey, I'd like to come, they like ghosted me. I'm like, what in the world is going on?
Well, I know one that I can definitely get you in. And
I'm
99% sure. Cincinnati, the steampunk symposium.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Are you going there?
A good one.
Yeah, I'm already booked for it.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, because we are definitely going to be involved with that one. I love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
We're very
people.
Good friends with the little lady that runs it. So, great convention. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can't
wait. Yeah, you definitely got to be there. Because it's going to be cool this year.
Have you guys seen the same thing that, like, conventions coming out of the pandemic have been more, I don't know, maybe conservative, but more cautious about some of their programming and whatnot? Is it just because they're worried about expenditures, or is there something else going on that?
I think a lot of it has to do with the fear of getting in over their head, because it's really hard to, you know, you can never predict what people are going to do or how many people you're going to have, right? But post-pandemic, it's even worse. I mean, it's, you know, you got to look at your timing, and is COVID, you know, running high at the time of your convention and all this, because many different factors can change, you know, a convention's intake by several thousands of dollars. And so people worry about that, and they worry about going in the hole when, you know, 2 years where our lives have all practically stopped. So I think a lot of that is they do worry about expenditures because they don't have any idea on how many people is actually going to attend. I think it's scary, and I think it's going to take probably about another year to noodle out. Wouldn't you say, Steve, about another year or so?
I'd say, but it also, you got to factor in that they also saw all the conventions that are active now saw a lot of other conventions actually go under because they didn't survive that period, and or they were, you know, like I said, locked into venue deals that they could not get out of, and so they basically had to, you know, go bankrupt, you know. So yeah, there was a lot of events that, you know, I've been aware of that, you know, actually had to, they actually went under. So I think that's made a lot of ones that are happening today kind of a little jittery. I mean, we're very, very cautious on how we do things. We're very careful so that we don't get too in over our heads. So, but if they're a convention that's in the past been used to, you know, fronting, you know, putting a lot of money down in advance on some things and reasonable expectation of recouping it on the other side, you know, I think some of them definitely would be more conservative, with what's been happening. And that's, I think that the convention world seems to, I mean, there seems to be, a, I mean, with us, I mean, we had our best year ever this year. And I think that, you know, people are eager to get back and active again. So hopefully it will shake out again over the next year or so.
Yeah.
Without any surprises.
The community is starving for events.
Yeah.
You know?
True.
So.
That's true.
Yeah.
I agree. Because it seems like, like I said, time stopped and it started chugging again. Everybody was ready. And then we had another insurgence, you know, everybody getting COVID. It's not been as bad as it was a couple years ago. I mean, you know, the virus isn't as, you know, deadly as it was, the strands, but people still do get very sick. And, we had another bout we had to deal with, but it was much easier this time, thank God. But, yeah, I don't want it. I never want it again if I can avoid it. But, you know, we can't stop living our lives. And
right. And
that's what we got to look at here, you know, moving forward and living our lives and enjoying our lives, you know. And we were starving, I mean, for, you know, fellowship and being around each other and just, you know, networking and brainstorming. And I mean, those 2 years were hard because we just didn't have that in person. You know, it's all good when you can do Zoom calls and all that and meetings, but in person, it just adds a whole other element and human interaction that we really, really were starving for and still are.
Truthfully. And you know, I started a new podcast during that time as, you know, a direct response to COVID and surviving COVID. And right now it's remote with my co-hosts, but we are making overtures now to change that and to be back together live in the studio. And, you know, this weekend we had a big kind of test. I launched a live theatrical version of the podcast at a local theater here just to kind of test the waters, and that went well. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, listening, I have a podcast called Back of the Cereal Box, and it is a pop culture podcast that celebrates the fun of the Saturdays of our youth while surviving adulthood today. And, in my head, I kind of envision it as a mashup of Pee Wee's Playhouse and Regis and Kathie Lee.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's
fun.
That's
and and tell people why, how you come up with that name. What is behind the name?
Well, so, you know, I said that I've always been a pop culture fan, but when I was a kid, you know, I'm of a generation that we did not have smartphones and tablets at the breakfast table on Saturday mornings. We were
right.
reading the back of the cereal box. That was our world. That was our newspaper. And that's what,
mm-hmm.
You know, we were turning to in between cartoons, kaiju, kung fu movies, and comic books. So that was my exposure to most of the pop culture that I love today. And so it was kind of a natural. And it gave me an excuse to eat cereal from my youth and do a show in my pajamas.
Yes, and don't forget those days when don't forget when we'd take the cereal box and we'd pour half of it into a bowl so that we could get to the prize at the bottom and then put everything back
yes.
in the bag.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember
absolutely.
Those. Yes.
We did. Well, there was a trick. If you laid the box down and kind of shook it a little bit, you could slide your arm in. You could slide your little hand in there and kind of feel around, see, without having to take any cereal,
yeah.
a bunch of it out. You could slide your hand around and shake it a little bit and dig and then tip the box back up. And, yeah, they'd never know that you were digging in the box.
Oh,
I had
yeah.
a system. I had a system, by gosh. And then we used to get, yeah, they had these cool prizes. You'd get decoder rings. Remember the decoder rings? And you'd have to decode the message on the back and all this cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was really neat. But I do have to ask John, what's some of your top cereals that you love from childhood? What's your three favorite?
So three favorite from when I was a kid is going to be Cinnamon Life,
yes,
Fruity Pebbles, and
yes.
the third one I would say Golden Grahams. Those were my favorite.
Oh yeah.
Ooh.
Now,
good choice.
Today, as an adult, it's Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Love Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Still love Fruity Pebbles. And my new favorite, my current favorite, is the Cinefuego Toast Crunch. It's Cinnamon
Ooh.
Toast Crunch with hot pepper.
Nice.
What?
And it's
what?
Yes.
Phenomenal. I'm going to have to look this up.
This is a fun question, Holly.
Yeah, it's like you know, eating Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but then washing it down with like a high grade ginger ale or ginger beer. You know, that really it's like eating Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal, then eating Red Hot candy, and then washing it down with a high-grade ginger ale or ginger beer. So, you know, you get that tongue going numb and your throat burning for, you know, an hour or two afterwards. It's phenomenal.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I want to tackle this, though, Holly, because this is a good question, though, because this is a fun one. My three as a kid were Fruity Pebbles, Crunch Berries, Captain Crunch Crunch Berries, and then by far, number one, you know it, Holly, Quisp. Do you remember Quisp?
Quisp.
So did you get Quisp when it came back out on store shelves a couple of months ago?
Yes, I did. Holly got me two boxes, and it was fantastic.
Bought them back from
as
Indiana.
Good as I remember it. Yes.
I found them in a clearance cart at a Kroger in Indiana.
Well, that was a special
yeah.
promotion they were doing at Kroger, $1.99 a box, I think it was, or $1.50
mm-hmm.
a box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, did you eat them all? I think you may select. Did you eat both boxes?
What's that? Holly?
Did you eat both boxes?
I still have a little bit of the second box. Yeah, I didn't like just want to go
say,
through it all right
you've
away.
You've been kind of holding on to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want to go through them all right away, but it was as good as I remembered it. I was very happy.
Now, my three, if you want my three, my top, and I would still eat the crap out of it. That's why I don't buy it, because I could literally eat a whole freaking box. Is, and my mouth's watering just talking about it. I mean, this stuff is like crack. Was the peanut butter Captain Crunch.
Oh, man. It doesn't get much better than that. Now, I'm gonna clue you into something really awesome, Holly. Peanut butter Captain Crunch is awesome, but it's not good for you and probably, truthfully, not fit for human consumption. But it's delicious.
Really?
But there is a brand that I discovered that I am in love with called Magic Spoon Cereal. And this is my everyday cereal because I can eat it every day because it's no grain. There's no wheat. There's no soy. No sugar. It's vegan. It's all organic. And it tastes phenomenal. And they're, low calorie, high protein, low carb, and their peanut butter flavor tastes like peanut butter Captain Crunch. It's unbelievably good, and it's good for you. So you guys remember at Imaginarium, Carrie Canasti and her husband, they love Magic Spoon too because it's clean. You can eat cereal and it's clean.
Wow.
So check them out. They sell it at Target. They have the peanut butter at Target. And their chocolate,
well, I'm gonna check it out.
Their chocolate is as good, maybe better than Cocoa Puffs or Cocoa Krispies. It's phenomenal.
Oh, I love them. I love them too.
Yeah, Magic Spoon, I get nothing from them for that endorsement.
That's awesome.
Yet.
Yeah, I was just telling the chat room, I usually don't eat cereal, but yeah, I definitely had to get that Quest box attended to.
Well,
that brought back good memories.
Yeah, because I quit eating. John, you've opened up so many doors for me now because I literally quit eating all of those cereals. I don't buy them. I don't eat except when the kids are coming. You know, I'll buy them when the grandkids are coming because it's fun. They're kids. Let them enjoy it. But, you know, I don't. I stay away from it all because I'm fat and sassy. I eat like a skinny person, but I am chunky. So I avoid all that junk, you know.
Are you happy avoiding all that stuff?
No.
Does that make you happy? Then why are you doing
no.
that?
No.
Look, here's the thing. Okay?
Because I'll be fatter. That's why.
Well, who cares? So here's the thing. Here's the thing. So you guys know this because you know me. During the first wave of the COVID pandemic, I got COVID. I got it bad.
Mm-hmm.
I almost died. I was hospitalized. You know, when I came out of that, I was just like, you know what? Life is really too short. We have no idea when our number is going to be called, when our last day on earth is going to be. And why in the world do we want to live it in misery? Why do we want to fill our lives with toxicity and drama and negativity and, you know, do things that make us unhappy? And so that's why I started doing the podcast, because I wanted to celebrate the things that make me happy. Saturday morning cartoons, comic books, toys, and breakfast cereal. And look, I don't eat breakfast cereal every day, because I have been under, you know, going through a weight loss journey, because that's the other part, you know, I wanted to get healthy at the same time. But, you know, a couple of spoonfuls on a Saturday morning, once a week, go for it. Yes, do it. Let that be your cheat. That's my cheat day. And on my cheat day, I do sugary cereal that is not at all healthy for me and probably not fit for human consumption. And I do it reading, watching cartoons, and reading big stacks of comic books. And that makes me super happy.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember those days, yeah.
I like
watching
that.
Hanna-Barbera cartoons, like the Shmoo. I love the character, the Shmoo and Captain Caveman.
The Shmoo.
That was just classic stuff. And God, there's even a cartoon, Dungeons and Dragons, that I watched, and there was a cartoon. It was based on the Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and some of the early arcade game characters. And I remember those days great, watching those Saturday cartoons. That was fun. It always ended with wrestling. When wrestling came on, you knew you're at the end of the cartoon window. That was like the last thing that came on before, like, I guess, noon or so. That's when you're about done.
So when I was growing up, it was cartoons all morning, then NWA World Championship Wrestling out of Atlanta, and then on Channel 43, WUAB, Superhost would play Godzilla movies or Kung Fu movies, and, you know, that would take us through to about, you know, 2 o'clock, and then we would hop on the bikes and ride down to the mall, ride down to the pool, go to the movie theater and see a matinee show. And, man, you know, those times, I'm getting excited just talking about it. Those times were so much fun, and they were so simple and so innocent, and our minds hadn't been, you know, corrupted by negativity and toxicity. We hadn't had the wonder of life beaten out of us, society,
right,
by circumstances and whatnot. And I feel like, you know, we need to get back to that in some regards. And I'm not talking about being childish, but, you know, being childlike. And you know, not being immature, but embracing the things that made us happy. And
I always said, if you lose that childlike wonder, John, you get old. You know, your brain, you get old. I will never lose my childlike wonder.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, I think creatives stay in tune with that a little better than most. I think you almost have to retain a little bit of that for being a creative.
Right.
I think that's part of it. You know,
yeah, I mean, you're onto it, John.
In general.
You know, there's that balance. You could still, and like you're saying, Stephen, with creatives, you could still have that childlike wonder. You know, I get amused by the silliest things. Easiest things, I'm amused. That other people be like, what? You know, that live in a box, they don't get it. But us creatives are outside that box, and we find amusement in the silliest things. And our life, I feel like we have more joy in things. Yeah, we all have our struggles, you know, but we find more joy in life than those that stay in that box. Don't you think so, John?
Yeah, I definitely do. I definitely do. And, you know, that's why I've become really so passionate about it. And it's become such an important part of my current creative journey and, you know, such a big part of what I'm doing. And, you know, it even changed the live performance stuff I'm doing. You know, I'm you know, not doing so much of the serious adult theme stuff. I'm doing more fun stuff and just having a ball.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, we
if
love
you have fun doing your job, then you never go to work a day in your life.
That's right.
right?
That's right.
Yeah, we loved what you did at Imaginarium. That was fantastic.
That was cool.
Yeah, and that was a first time for that. So that was a brand new piece that I debuted.
Yeah. So what do you got coming up this fall, though? I know you mentioned that some of the bookings are you know, like I said, a little tentative with some of the conventions right now. But what, do you have anything coming up this fall?
Yeah. So I am going to be doing a couple of conventions. I'll be at HalloCon in Dalton, Georgia, in October. Next week, I'm launching a kind of a cool new project called Music City Magic and Mystery Tours. I've been doing, for the last 4 years, ghost tours in Nashville, Tennessee, going from bar to bar, telling the ghost stories in those locations. And I'm tweaking it a little bit and going to be doing the same concept, but instead of telling ghost stories, doing close-up magic. And that actually starts next Wednesday. So, you know, we'll go to 3 bars, and while people are, you know, enjoying their drinks, I'll be blowing their minds with some pretty cool close-up magic. And it's limited to 10 people per night. You know, we're going to start just Wednesday nights to get it launched and see how that goes and go from there. But so I'm doing that. And then doing HalloCon in October. And then, you know what, I think I'm going to take a break for November and December. I've always hated working and performing through the holidays. And so I'm going to start honoring my desire. And just after Halloween, I'm done performing, you know, and just I'll focus on the podcast, finishing up the next volume of the series, and, you know, starting 2023 fresh.
Well, Beck
can
is
you
gonna
believe
have to
we're
hurry.
Already talking? Can you believe we're already talking about 2023?
Yes.
It's insane. But I have plans. Yeah. This year has just been one chaotic thing after another, it seems, because we've all come out of the chaos.
Yeah.
It has been pure chaos for me. I know that. And it's been a lot. This year, I've had two deaths just in the past month that's hit me hard. And, it's just been a whirlwind. And right after Imaginarium, and we've had, you know, so much going on. But I think 2023, looking ahead, I have some ideas. And, John, I want to run them by you. I've got some things floating around in my head from things you've mentioned. And I kind of like the idea of a book signing with magic and mayhem. And I've got an idea.
Oh, yeah.
So
I was going to
run it by you. I know you have some Lexington. You have some Lexington peeps around too, besides just us. We're here, of course, always for you. But I have some ideas. Maybe we could do something here.
Well, he's always got a free place to stay in Lexington, so that always cuts the cost down. He's got Holly and Stephen bed and breakfast
from there. Family is from there. All of my mom's family is from Lexington. So
he's got an army here, then.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm chuckling, though.
An audience built, you know.
If Beck is listening here, yes, she is. She's in the chat room. Better hurry up because one of our chat room, Beck Harrison, actually today was talking about wanting to get on one of your tours. Literally was talking to me today about that in a Facebook message. So you're going to have to hurry, Beck. You got to dive in on
Beck. You better get your butt down there. She's my daughter-in-law that I inherited.
Now I'll still be doing the tours. I actually manage the company, so those aren't going away.
Cool.
But we're just adding a new option, and hopefully I'll have enough tour guides hired by the end of October that I can take a break. But we'll see.
That's awesome.
Ooh, maybe we could eventually set up maybe into a tour and some kind of bookie event here. That would be cool.
Uh-huh. Yep. Uh-huh. Nice to talk.
You got me thinking, John. You got me thinking.
Yep,
we're going
to
sell a bunch of books.
Let's do it.
Yes. I know where you're going, Holly. I like it. That's cool.
You know, my brain starts clicking. I start thinking. I'm an organizer. Is this what I do?
So, John, I am curious about something, though, because you have such a great personality and presence, and you're such a great performer. How have you not done film and TV acting yet on an extensive basis? I mean, you come across so well on screen when you're doing your shows and things like that too. So I mean, yeah. So it's just because you hate it.
Yeah.
That's a secret.
I've done three movies. Four movies, and one made for TV movie. I don't enjoy that. That genre, I don't enjoy that medium. It's a lot of sit around and wait, and
yes.
you don't get paid to act, you don't get paid to perform, you get paid show up and wait, and I hate that.
You're one of the few that realizes that. I talk to so many people that are like, oh, it must be just great to make movies. It must be great. And I'm like, you have no idea how much of it is just, you know, just waiting, then little burst of action, waiting, little burst of action. So you described it perfectly.
Well,
that's
and,
true.
You know, too, the other thing, too, is, you know, I have come from a live, you know, performance background, a theater background. I've been performing live on stage since I was 8 years old, and I really need that immediate feedback from an audience. I need that interaction.
Right.
And someone listening might say, "Well, John, how do you get that with a podcast?" Well, it's a good question. I'm glad you asked. It is a live stream, a live stream podcast that is interactive with the audience. They, just like we're doing right now with your chat room, our viewers can interact with us in the chat and post comments, and we, you know, acknowledge them. We have conversations with them, and I get that immediate feedback from not just my co-hosts, but from the audience. And I treat that video monitor that we do the video podcast as if it were the proscenium of a stage. And so to me, it's just another live stage performance. It's just being broadcast.
Yeah, because you're such a good job.
I agree with John. I love stage acting. I love plays. I always loved, you know, I don't understand stage fright. I just don't. I never have been, you know, afraid to be in front of people. I've never had that fear of stage fright. Even as a kid, when we'd have our programs at school, all the other parents would be cracking up because they'd be like, "Look at Holly, watch Holly," my mom always said, because I would be, you know, putting it on. You know, I loved it. I always did. And it is the energy that you feel from the crowd. So I understand what you're saying, John, because, you know, when you're in front of a camera, you don't have that energy. You don't feel that because you don't have a big audience other than the other actors and, you know, the people that, you know, behind the camera. You don't have that audience that you can see and feel that energy, you know.
That's right.
And hear the gasp or the laughter or the, you know, that fuels you. You get those responses and that fuels you and gives you a boost. And
the rock bands talked about that a lot in the COVID period when they were only doing like live streams. They weren't playing in front of live audiences. They were doing some shows on just camera. And they talked about how weird it was not having the energy and the feedback from the crowd.
The energy.
And doing, they talked about that a lot. So, yeah, yeah.
It's an endorphin rush. It really is.
Yeah. You're a good actor, Holly. I can't wait till Amy releases that short film that you played the nun in.
I know.
That's fantastic.
I'm so excited.
Holly played a nun?
Yes.
I played an old crapshitty, you know, hardcore nun, you know, being my hardcore self that ran this recovery center for addicts. But I was this hardcore nun. And I was sobering. I have to send you a picture. It's hilarious.
Oh, it's great.
My cousins are like, that didn't even look like you.
No, it's fantastic. She had her lines down
pat. I actually love
she's
acting.
Great. Yeah. But,
I do. I love it. I love acting.
Yeah. Stage is special, though. And that's like John says, you know, when you have audience feedback, that's different. Different ballgame.
And the other thing I like about it that a lot of film actors don't like is that it's not perfect, and it will never be perfect.
Right.
No.
And
no.
And it's different every night. So every performance is something someone has never seen before and will never see
original.
Again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone's a little bit different, just a little bit, you know. Even if they got everything
just
down
like a
back,
live podcast.
Little, yeah.
Just like a live podcast.
That's true. Well, I mean, it's like studio recordings for a band versus a live show. And, same thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, one it's, you know, get it perfected. But the other one, everybody loves, you know, the live show. So that's, it's different. It's
special
thing.
I've got a question. When was your... What age were you when you did your first live performance, John?
I was eight. It was a church play. And I didn't even know what I was doing, but I had fun doing it, and the audience loved it, and everyone talked about how good it was. And I was like, huh. Now, here's the thing, though, Holly. Even after that experience, I never thought that's what I was going to do. I always wanted to be a comic book artist. And I, even up to my senior year in high school, I was planning to go to the Pittsburgh Art Institute and study art.
Oh, wow.
But in high school, I played Mr. Bumble in Oliver, and one... an Ohio Theater Guild for Best Supporting Actor in a Musical. And I was like, huh, so I'm pretty good at this. Maybe I ought to try, you know, and basically I got bit by the theater bug. I mean, I had already been bit, and it was already a passion, but winning that award out of all of the high school performers in the state of Ohio was like a huge thing. And so I was like, oh, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. Because the thing with art, and I'm still doing art, I've got a comic book series that I have coming out, but I don't like doing art on a deadline. I don't like having to produce line work for somebody else's timeline. It's not enjoyable to me. And so in the 11th hour, I turned down a full-ride scholarship to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh and went and became a thespian.
Wow.
Dun-dun-dun. Yeah.
But you're so good at it all. You're like this well-rounded creative. You know, you got all the boxes checked. You excel in everything that you do, and people love your performances and just adore you, you know, when the one year you didn't actually perform, they were like, we miss John, you know, I heard that from so many people, they're like, we miss John, why didn't John perform? I say, he's taking a break, it's okay, people can have a break.
Well, that's really sweet, you know, and you know, I did... this year at Imaginarium, for those of you who missed it, shame on you. I did my haunted theater show. My it's a magic, you know, show, for an hour long show with haunted themes. And Polly, you can agree that the reaction from the audience was rather stupendous.
Yes.
I really did make people question what was reality and what was an illusion. And that was one of my finest moments. I love that performance for that audience that night. It was one of my favorite memories of Imaginarium.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, you did a phenomenal job. You did. You did a phenomenal job. And, yeah, I was like, how did he do that? You know, yeah, I was a-watching, and I was, like, front and center to him. And Beck Harrison, who's in the chat room, she's like, I'd like to point out, I was front and center for that magic show. Yeah, we really enjoyed it. I heard that from a lot of people.
Yep. Yeah, we did. John got dropped, by the way. His line dropped, so I think he'll be calling us back. But we can talk about that, because that was a definite highlight of Imaginarium.
No.
I mean, here's John. He's called back. But, yeah, that was a highlight of Imaginarium. We really enjoyed it. I got some great photos from that, too. I've actually I'm going to pop a couple of those on our website. But, yeah, that was awesome. I mean, yeah,
that was neat.
Definitely. Many people talked to me about that one. So, but he's back.
Yeah,
I see him.
Yep.
He's in there.
Yeah,
Mike,
sorry,
on.
I got cut off.
It's all right.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was talking about how, you know, the response from that show, you know, it was all positive. People loved it, and yeah, we enjoyed it. It was great. I was front and center, and Beck Harrison in the chat room, she was front and center. Yeah, we definitely enjoyed it. It was neat.
Yeah.
Something I'd never seen before, you know, and you added your own little elements and flair, you know. It was great. It really was.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, what I think I liked so much, and, you know, I had done it last October, 56 performances here in Nashville last October. And one of the things that I think people who've seen me perform before, it took them back that it was so, I want to say reserved, you know, very, very meticulous and very controlled. You know, it wasn't that over-the-top, larger-than-life character that a lot of people were used to. But at the end of the day, they left going, what just happened? And that was
right.
My goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
And then the next night at the banquet, they got to see the larger than life colorful stuff with the comic book themes and breakfast cereal stuff. So
that's cool.
Yeah, you did the Saturday morning too, breakfast cereal, you know, podcast. So that was great. Back of the box. That was fantastic. And people really enjoyed that. That was cool. I hope you can do that one again, because, yeah, people really enjoyed that. And people were like,
yeah,
oh, I missed that. And I was like, well, you should have got out and went, you know.
And, John, we have an individual who wants to make a call, and they're in the chat room. Yeah, we got enough time to take a quick call. Dial 619-639-4616 if you'd like to give a call real quick.
Yeah, somebody was asking.
Yeah, that's
one. Oh,
yeah,
we were talking about Carrie Canisty, and
yeah,
I'm flipping through Instagram, and here's a reel of her working out those triceps. That chick is built like a brick tank.
She is. She is.
She's a brick house.
She is wonderful.
She's
a brick house. I was so glad that she decided to join the group this year and come down, because she was a great addition to the award.
She'll be back
too. Yeah, I think she will.
And she'll be back.
Her husband.
Yeah, yeah. She
Yeah, Scott.
She liked doing that with Diana this year, you know, because my daughter always presents the awards like Dana White, you know. But, yeah, Carrie got to do that with her, and she really enjoyed that. Yeah, she's cool. I really like her.
Yeah.
So, John, while we're waiting on this call, what do you got that's coming up,
okay,
like, soon where people can see you?
Well, I mean, tune in every Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central on YouTube and Facebook for Back of the Cereal Box. And then starting next Wednesday, the Music City Magic and Mystery Tours. And then Halloween weekend, I'll be at HoloCon in Dalton, Georgia.
Cool. Steven, are you there? I think he's chatting with our
okay,
our caller.
We got the caller on the line.
There he is.
Name of our caller is John, so that matches up with you, John. And here they are. And hold on. All right, caller, you're on the line.
Hi, it's great to be on. I have a question about cosplaying. I'm a newbie to the cosplaying scene. I just am wondering, what do you think? You know, I'm trying to pull off this look, you see, and I don't want to lose people with it, so to speak. They might be concerned that I'm trying to be something I'm not, and I just need some opinions on how I can differ this up, so to speak.
Well, that is a great question, and you know, the whole thing is, cosplay is playing a character. It's acting. And, you know, part of the whole idea is that you're not yourself. And you have permission to be something that you maybe aren't. That's the whole point, is you're transforming yourself into something that you aren't. I cosplay as Harley Quinn. I'm not a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a superhero, but, you know, I have a lot of fun doing it, and people love it. So, you know, there's no such thing as doing cosplay wrong. You do what you want to do, and you have fun. And I'll tell you, the convention attendees, convention families are the most accepting and welcoming group you could possibly meet. So do it.
Definitely.
That's true.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Right. So my issue that I'm running into is, you know, people are going to think that I look like Charlie Chaplin type character, but I'm trying to go for like a mecha version of Hitler or something. But I don't want them to get the wrong idea.
Okay, so when you're cosplaying a villain, you've got to make it clear that you're a villain. If you make it perfectly clear that you are the bad guy and that you are not endorsing a philosophy or a lifestyle, you know, it can work. But I'm going to tell you the truth. That's a pretty hot that's a pretty hot potato to juggle. I might give some more thought to that.
You know, he wasn't a real guy though. He's just the character from Wolfenstein, right?
Okay.
Like everybody.
Well, as long as that's clear.
As long as that's clear.
Yeah. That was you're really clear with that. Yeah.
So I'm just. I'm just curious how I can portray this villain without screaming things like about how I don't like the Jews and stuff. Because I'm perfectly fine with the Jewish people. I don't know how it would go over if I stood in the center of the arena and said something to the effect of like, I don't like Jews, right? Like,
it would not go over.
Yeah, no, you can't say that. No.
No.
I might rethink that one.
Yeah,
right, so,
I think I would.
So maybe a better character here. Maybe I go as this fictional character known as Benito Mussolini. I don't know.
Yes.
There you go.
There you go.
I think I'll be a little bit more choosy, but yes.
Yeah. Well, you
all
go
right.
with Franco, because
well,
less people,
me on,
less
I,
people
I
know
really
Franco. You're welcome.
Man,
thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Well, John, less people know Franco from World War II with Spain, so maybe he could be a little safer doing Franco instead of Mussolini or Hitler.
Yes.
That was a good call.
Agreed.
That was fun. Oh, God.
That was
that
fun.
That was fun. Oh, that was good. Good call. John, your thoughts?
Interesting call.
I'm a little bit speechless right now, but that's okay. No, here's the thing. So here's
oh,
the thing
fun.
About that. So you know, there's a fine line to be walked when we're talking about historic, real-world historical villains. And, you know,
right.
Adolf Hitler was pure, unadulterated evil. And there's no redeeming quality in that persona. And to portray him as a cosplay character is really dangerous, because there is such a thing as Nazi fetishes. There
right.
are people out there who,
oh.
who actually fantasize
yes,
about
that's true.
Nazis and hold up Adolf Hitler as a hero, when
yeah.
the rest of
oh.
you know, the rest of society, the rest of sane society recognizes him as a villain. So doing that character, you run the risk of powering those fetishes or those
yeah.
fetish worshipers and alienating the friends and family in that con community that you have. And I just,
yeah.
I don't think I would do it.
No, I think he had a different slant. I think he said, if I heard him correctly, I think he said Mecha Hitler. So I think he was almost
yeah.
talking like a robot Hitler. And now that could
yeah.
kind of work
yeah.
if you're doing it kind of like fantastically or, you know, sci-fi-ish or something
yeah.
like that. That
right.
I mean, you know, that,
you're
that's
not actually
that's not
doing the historical.
You're not doing the historical
right.
fetish thing. Yeah. So that might work.
Yeah,
so.
But,
right.
Yeah,
and I'm saying that as a person with part of my heritage is Jewish. So
yeah, mine is
so
too.
I'm saying that's okay.
Mm.
You know, I guess.
Mm.
Oh, but yeah, that's yeah, that would probably work if he made it a Mecca Hitler, like, you know, so
right.
something like that. But yeah, as long as it's like you said, clear villain and definitely not the fetish
the
yeah,
historical figure
right.
yeah the fetish
yeah, that
yeah.
kind of thing.
And
right.
Yeah, not endorsing it. Yeah.
Right.
True.
So
I agree.
We're coming up on just about a minute left. So John, I want to give you a chance to give the last statement of the night, and then Holly, you can take us out. But yes, this has been a great show, John. I've loved having you. And definitely got to catch up with you more often. Great call tonight. I love the call in. That was fun. And next Wednesday, yeah, we'll have a good one with you with Bridget Nelson. She gets to make her encore appearance. Of course, she had the famous show with us with the Transformer that blew up mid-show.
Poor
day. So, we got her back next week. Live shows are unpredictable. But next week, we should hopefully weather will cooperate, and Bridget will have a full very easy show with all our hosts. So thank you, John. But give you the final word and give your any kind of links that you want to give, and Holly, then take us out.
Yeah, so for anyone listening, just connect with me at johnpyka.com, johnpyka. There are links there to my magic, my books, and my podcast, and, you know, come have some fun with me, and I post all of my appearances on social media, and you can connect with me through that website address, johnpyka.com, johnpyka.com, and Johnny, I'm done. Ta-da!
Ta-da! Thank you, John. We love you. We love having you on. We must have you back on sooner, post to later. But everybody check John out. Check johnpica.com out and see where you can catch John and all the fun things he does. And grab a book of his and take it for a spin. Join us next week. As Stephen said, we'll have Bridget back on and hopefully have a smooth show with her. Thank you for joining us tonight, and we will see you on the flip side, as John Pica would say. Good night.